This Stu Lectures episode features founder of Merino Mountain Shirt Company, McNair, Neil McNair, recorded live at the global event in Cardigan, West Wales in 2015.
Well, thank you for being here. And, you know, I'm the last speaker of the day, and I hope you enjoy my story as well. So I don't know if you know anything about the brand McNair shirts. It's a mountain shirt, okay? This is our first time, okay? That's got more to do with coming here and telling a story and not telling the story you always tell or telling a new story. I've never told this story before. Well, certainly not into a group as large as this. I do, however, tell this story daily, but in a much more intimate environment, because it's a massive, massive passion of mine. And I never set out to become part of a manufacturing company that makes shirts. But through connections and how my life has gone, that's where I've ended up. So yeah, hopefully it's quite an interesting story. But what I'd like to do first of all is show you a little video that explains our product, just in case you don't know much about it. So hopefully that explains a little bit about the product that we've created. And so that's where we are now. I'm wearing a shirt at the moment. I've got loads of shirts here. You can have a little feel and try on at some point if you want to get closer to it. But how did we get here? Well, my background has got absolutely nothing to do with clothing or textiles or manufacturing. My background's in snowboarding. And I left the United Kingdom when I was 18 after a failed attempt at university. And it was my mum who suggested that if I stayed in the country, I was going to get into a lot of trouble. And And I had a conversation with her about university, and I thought I'd really let her down because my brother and sister both went to university and excelled, and that's what I thought you had to do. That's what school told me what I had to do. I like to be creative at school, I like to do woodwork, I like to do art, I like to do theatre studies, but I wasn't allowed to do those. I was allowed to choose one, and I had to do two languages, and I had to do two sciences, and all these other things, which now is just absolute bonkers. But I was fed down this pathway that I had to excel and go to university. So when I dropped out, I was thought, oh, I'm going to hold my head in shame here, my parents are going to be so upset with me. And my mum's response was, oh, thank God for that. She just didn't want me to go in the first place at all. So as a teenager, it's not good to not talk to your parents and actually understand what they want you to do and have conversation with them and sulk around being moody and all this kind of stuff. So the moment I had that conversation with my mum, and she thought, you need to go away and you need to do what you love to do. And what you love is snowboarding. And I was very fortunate to go up my formative years in Scotland from quite a big skiing background. My family's really into skiing in the Cairngorms. And then we moved south to England when I was 9. And we then go on holidays to the Alps. And I remember the entire year, all I would do was dream about going onto the mountains and being in that environment. And I would be on the holiday for 6 days, and that last day I'd be there to the very, very last lift shut until it had to get kicked off the mountain and go down. And then all I would think about was the following year when we'd go on holiday again. So I was pushed into the mountains, and I don't want to go too much into that story because it's going to draw away from the story of the shirt. But I've done 18 years of endless winters. I've done northern hemispheres, southern hemispheres, and I work as a snowboard instructor, coach, British national trainer, and that's what my career path has been. And it's been phenomenal because I now can support my family and my 7-year-old daughter, and you know, I've got a nice home in the mountains, and that's come from a passion of snowboarding. The other thing that's happened is that I worked out on the back of a fag packet. Well, not really, I don't smoke, but it was actually back in an envelope, that I've done about 18,000 hours of work at high altitude. And that is quite, well, it resonates very much with Hyatt Jeans and how they explain the terms of becoming a grandmaster with 10,000 hours. So I reckon I'm pretty well qualified to know what goes on in the mountain. And one constant through that entire time is I have to wear clothing to protect myself, to keep me warm, to adapt to the environment that I'm working in. And the next statement, zero jackets that worked. Now that's quite a bold outline. But I reckon I've had as many jackets as half the people in this room. And how many of those jackets do I still have? None. Where are they? In a skip, in a landfill site. Now I've got a little more savvy with it. So what I try to do is before they've completely disintegrated, I shipped a load of jackets out to Nepal, you know, to help people after the earthquakes over there. So I felt quite good about that. But ultimately, they're going to start to stop to work. because when you buy a new jacket, I'm actually in quite a fortunate place now where I get given jackets. But I still, you know, treat them with respect, and I know what the value of them is. You know, a top level jacket, £500-600. You love that jacket. It is the best thing ever. And then you start to wear it, and it just starts to degenerate. And after a little period of time, you like that jacket, but it's a bit dirty. The waterproofing isn't working as well. The DWR coating is kind of washed away. Looks a bit scruffy. The stitching starting to come out. And then eventually you get to this point where you just loathe the jacket because it just doesn't work anymore and it looks a mess. Now, if you're only going to the mountains for like 1 week every year, that's going to be a long period of time. But I need it to work daily. And not just daily, in the evening and in the morning when I'm cleaning the snow off the car and I'm taking the dog out for a walk and I'm going to the pub and back again. So it's quite frustrating. And really, all you're doing is taking plastic into the mountains. And, well, before these type of technical jackets existed, something else existed. So we had to backtrack back to what that was. A pair of Dachstein gloves. And this is where the inspiration came from. If you don't know what Dachstein gloves are, these are Dachstein gloves. And I didn't know what they were either. And the other thing that's great about the business that I'm in terms of teaching people to snowboard is you meet some really, really interesting characters, like you do when you come to events like this. And one of my clients, who I wouldn't even consider calling a client now, I feel like I'm part of their family, I've taught them for many, many years, he introduced me to these, and he used to be in a climbing background. He was a hobby climber. And he said, have you ever seen Dak Stein gloves, Neil? They're the most amazing things, because you look at them and you think, these would be utter shite in rain and snow, but actually, they're brilliant. So I was like, really? Okay. He said, honestly, you've got to go and try them. So I did, so I went riding in them. And I was like, Richard, you're absolutely right. These are amazing. And he gave me these years ago. I don't know, before we started McNair Shirt, so it's going to be 5 years. And I've never washed them, I've never done anything with them, and I've worn these a lot. And not only me, what I do with these gloves now is I keep them in my backpack, and I spend a lot of time touring in the mountains. And when you're touring, you're changing altitude a lot, you're sweating, and then you're getting cold again. And, you're having to fiddle with your equipment a lot, so you're touching the snow, you're in contact with the snow a lot more. And everybody, or someone in the group, always ends up getting very, very cold hands and very wet gloves. And I pull these out, wear these. And they look at me a little bit like, what? I said, trust me, wear these. And they wear them, and they come, that was brilliant, my hands were so warm. Okay, yes, snow gets stuck to the outside and all kinds of stuff, but they work. And for a set of gloves that's 5 years old, that's pretty damn good, okay? I'm also quite particular about gloves as well, because if you've ever been skiing or snowboarding for a long period of time and your hands get quite wet, particularly snowboarders and particularly lower level snowboarders, because they spend a lot of time touching the snow because they fall over a lot and they have to push themselves back up, the gloves just start to absolutely stink. It's disgusting. And they take the gloves off in a bubble and you're like, oh man, like seriously, get those things away from me. So there's no way I'd lend my gloves to other people, but I don't mind them wearing these because they're 100% breathable. So I know it's not going to hold their body odor. So that was the idea of trying to use this to create something different. Trying to use this to not be so reliant on technical plastic, jackets. So we were just having a cup of tea, me and Richard, and a piece of cake. His wife always makes us nice cakes when we finish riding. And he said, well, why don't we try to do something as an outer garment made out of that material? I was like, yeah, but it's quite coarse. I don't know if I want that next to my skin. Oh, well, we might be able to find something a little bit softer, a little bit smoother, but why don't we do it? Why don't we make a hoodie? I was like, there's no way we're having a hoodie. I want a shirt. He's like, well, why do you want a shirt? I'm like, because I like to wear shirts, and I like wearing shirts in the mountain, and why can't I be fashionable at the same time? So that was the idea. Plastic sucks, and performance should be stylish. Why not? Why should we be engulfed in consumerism and disposable fashion and all these things? Why can't we just have something that works? Why is this drive for technology, the day that it shifted into having, a plastic jacket and then having to add so many different coatings and, stuff that's probably not very ethical and not very good for the environment, to try to create a barrier and create a shield against the elements? Why not have something that's natural, sustainable, and actually you're not creating barriers, you're becoming part of the environment that you're riding in. And it feels lush, it feels comfortable, it's not noisy, it's not, and you want to look good. I like the fact that snowboarding and wearing what I'm wearing now, I snowboard in jeans as well quite a lot because I quite like that, that I can come off the hill and I can walk straight into the pub and I'm dressed for the evening. I'm not wearing all this garish clothing. I'm not sweating. I don't look horrible. I don't look like I've been out skiing or snowboarding. I just look smart. And it's nice that. It's a different idea. So how did we do it? Well, we decided to make a prototype shirt. And the way we did this was Richard found this lovely lady called Christine, who lives in Altrincham in Cheshire, who makes clothing and kind of sells it on the market, and maybe some ordered clothes like ladies' nice Sunday jackets and things like that. And we took her a shirt that I like to snowboard in. And it was really simple, really. He said, can you make me a shirt a bit like that, out of that? And she went, yeah. I said, but I want the arms a little bit longer, and I want the body a little bit longer because I want my bum to stay warm, and I want it to go over my gloves. But yeah, pretty much just make it a bit like that, please. So she did. And then, you know, 2 or 3 weeks later, Richard came back out and he goes, I've got the shirt. And I was thinking, oh God, this is going to be terrible. And he pulled it out and it was this lovely blue color. And I was blown away by it. And I put it on and I thought, man, she's got the fit exactly right. This thing's dope. And so I've got to go and test this. So I start riding around in it all the time. And I remember one of the first days I tested it, I was on the beginner slope in Teen. And it was pissing it down with rain. It was a little bit like it was this morning. That sort of heavy drizzle you get really wet with. And when you're teaching beginners, you spend a lot of time stood still. So it's just coming down. It's like, this is a pretty miserable day, but I'm not wet on the inside. This is great. And then I went in and had my lunch just across the road, and I dried off within 20 minutes. And then I jumped in my car, drove down to the resort, met Rich, went up to high altitude to, you know, just shy of 3,000 meters, and the wind was, you know, was blowing a hoolie up there and there. All I had to do was just put a little neck gaiter on, and that was it. That's all I had to change. I was like, oh, this thing works. But there was problems. When you snowboard, you either go right foot forward or left foot forward. And if you're really good, you go both ways. But I ride right foot forward. And the way a gent's shirt is buttoned means that there's a gap there. So the wind was blowing in. We also realized that the shirt we were using was knitted. So there's a lot more stretch. So eventually it would stretch around the buttonholes, and they would come open, they would sometimes come off. And, you know, it was just riddled with lots and lots of problems. And we eradicated some of them, and then we thought we need to see how well this works. So we had 20 made up, and we found different sizes, and then identified 20 key mountain people, people that I knew would really dig this product and really put it through its paces and test the absolute bejesus out of it. So we sent them out to them and just said, just use it, see what you think, see if you like it, if you don't like it, what would you change on it? And that feedback was absolutely critical to how the shirt came around now, because it wasn't just my feedback. Other little things came in, like Sam, who's in the room now, he had one, and Sam works for one of his jobs, is works for a sunglasses company called Dragon Alliance. And he wanted to put a little place to hang his sunglasses. So he put it in, and it's now known as the Nelson Loop, because his surname's Nelson. Another guy, called Craig Smith, he's like, I always use it when I'm traveling, and I just love to put my passport in my top pocket. So can you just make sure it's passport size? Brilliant, great idea, let's do that. When you're snowboarding as well, we have this pretty cool move called a Eurocarve. I don't know if you know what a Eurocarve is. So it's basically you just whack it down the mountain about 50 mile an hour. And then once you're going that fast, you launch yourself onto the ground and put all of your weight onto your elbow, and you're as low as you can on the ground carving away. But when you do that, the snow sometimes comes up into your arm a little bit. So we put another baffle in there to stop the snow coming down. So we had all these things, but the one sort of overriding problem with it was that there was too many inconsistencies with it, and we didn't even want to make a business. We just wanted to make a shirt that kind of worked, and then everybody kind of liked it. So everyone likes this. Should we do something with it? Yeah. Well, how are we going to do it? I don't know how to make shirts. You don't know how to make shirts. We can't really find anyone to make them. And so the next thing was help. We needed help. We knew we were onto something that people liked, but we needed another catalyst, someone else who could help us drive it forward. Because myself and Richard, and also another guy who works with Ian, who is part of who does all of our art and marketing, we're just a bunch of half-baked dreamers. Yeah, we like this. This works. This is cool. I don't know how to do it. So we needed to find an amazing realist, someone who could take our idea, our concept, and make it commercially viable and make it much, much better and get rid of all those problems. And just through Richard's other business and his contacts, he knew of a lady called Natalie. And Natalie was in a bit of a junction of her life, what she was doing with her work, but her background has always been textiles. So we met Natalie and we had a chat and we showed her a product, and then we scheduled another meeting at ISPO, which is like the big trade fair in Munich in Germany. And then Natalie came along and she had bags and bags and bags of wool. And we just kind of looked at each other going, what the, okay, cool. And she starts pulling all this different wool, like this is a British breed, this is that, this is the blue fleece Leicester, this is more coarse, this has got this much oil in it. Bang, 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 bang. Mind blown, like massively blown. But we knew that we'd found someone who was an expert and who shared the passion of what we had. But Natalie's passion is a little bit different than mine. Her dream's a little bit different. Mine is to make something, the best mountain shirt in the world, something that works at high altitude and something that has longevity, that will last forever. Natalie believes in that dream, but she also believes in making something proper in Yorkshire. And Yorkshire has got a huge, huge textile industry that's, well, I guess it's peak was just right up there, and all that's happened is just died off. But there's a huge amount of skill and talent there, and all the old mills, and particularly a lot of the wool finishing in Yorkshire is fantastic. So Natalie's dream was to try to do everything in one place and try to reduce the supply chain so it wasn't going around the world twice to make a product, that it was all made in one very, very condensed area. And using the skills, the real skills, to be able to do that. Because actually, no one would touch this shirt. We'd go around to people and go, yeah, would you be able to outsource this? Would you be able to manufacture it for us? Well, no. Yeah, your fabric's too thick. Yeah, but we need it to be that thick to stay warm. Oh, no, you can't use that kind of stitching. You need to, that's too thick. You just need to use a little needle. But then that'll, the quality of the product won't be as good. Well, Natalie then just turned around to me and Richard and Ian said, if we're going to do this properly, we're going to have to set up a manufacturing unit. The dreamers, what do we do? Cool, yeah, let's do that. Wicked. So that's what happened. So now, all the spinning, the weaving, the milling, the raising, and the steaming, that's all the things you saw in the video, and that's actually where it all gets done. All done within 10 miles of our atelier in Yorkshire. It's actually West Yorkshire in a little town called Slowit. Well, if you read it, it would read Slaithwaite, but if you're from there, it's called Slowit. And interestingly, actually, so the whole unit that we are in, it's a big old mill, it's a good 6-story mill, it's massive. It's the first time, apparently, in 100 years that mill is full and only making textiles. And you have to commend it to Natalie for being able to achieve that goal. It is so impressive. And that lady has worked her fingers to the absolute bone whilst I've been doing some rigorous testing of shirts in the mountains, snowboarding. It's a tough job. I say it in jest, but so much of this story has to be accredited to her and to the machinists and everyone who she's managed to find to be re-employed and to be able to, to regenerate the British textile and manufacturing again. It's not an easy thing, like running a manufacturing unit at all. Yeah, but it's the only way that we could make this. So that's kind of our story a little bit. Oh, watch this space for British wool too. So the only thing that sort of messes up the supply chain is at the moment we're using two different fabrics. We use an Australian virgin merino, and which I'm wearing at the moment, and we use a recycled Chilean merino. And the reason we're using that is because, well, we want it to be the best quality. And so far, that is the best quality we could find. But behind the scenes, we're continually trying to develop a British breed, because that would complete the story, that we have British wool being manufactured in a British atelier making the best mountain shirt in the world. That'd be pretty cool. Yeah. So hopefully, maybe even by the end of this year, but we'll see. So I've talked a lot about what, you know, my vision and how I see it and how good I believe it is. Now, people have started to buy this office, which is like, brilliant, cool. And the feedback that we get is phenomenal. You know, things I can't believe people say this about it. So this is a dude in Canada. He's absolutely incredible. It far surpassed my expectations. Couldn't ask for a better product. Pretty proud of that. There's another guy, one of our ambassadors, Ed Lee, TV presenter. I get a compliment every time I wear it. It's hands down the best piece of kit in my bag at the moment, and I won't be bested anytime soon. It's wicked. Interestingly, what Ed's saying there about I get complimented every time he wears it, because that's actually one common theme that happens all the time. And it, you know, if I go back to the very first day that I was testing it, the very first shirt, at the time I was sponsored by a snowboard brand called Analog, and it's quite a cool niche brand. And everyone kept going, is that next season's Analog shirt you're wearing? No. You sure? It's like, no, it's just, well, we just kind of made it. What do you mean you just kind of made it? So yeah, just, well, we just got it made up. How'd you do that? It's like, well, you just do. Yeah. So that was good. And then every time I wear it, like, well, Richard wanted to tell the story and about me being in the gents' toilets in Shoreditch. So I'm in there having a few pints, and then I go to the toilets of a Waz, and I just hear this voice behind me in a slightly Dutch accent. Hey, I like your shirt, man. All right, fella. But because it happened so many times before, I wasn't too worried about it. But he was really, really close to me. That kind of freaked me out a little bit. And he goes, yeah, I was just looking at the stitching on the back. And it transpires he worked for Diesel, and he was really into kind of, you know, the quality of the shirt. But it, you know, you it's not often that you'd be randomly walking around and just a guy compliments another guy on his shirt randomly. So if you ever have a shirt, be prepared, okay? The final quote is probably my favorite, actually, because it resonates more to me and the world that I actually live in. I fucking love the shirt, man. So thanks, man. this guy, Tom, he's the editor of the biggest snowboard magazine in America. So that was, that was the best compliment ever. And I can't not read it in his American accent. So we know that we've got this one amazing, unique product. Like, we know that. Everyone keeps telling us, I know it works. The shirt that I'm wearing at the moment is probably a year and a half old. This is a midweight shirt. I've worn this most days. I wear it hiking in the mountains, sweating in it, snowboarding in it, sleeping it in refuges, partying in it, falling over in it, lying around the floor in a bar. Yeah, I've a few alter egos. You might see them later tonight. Yeah, I have a nickname called Wags, and then I have PW, which is Party Wags, and then I have SPW, which is Super Party Wags. And that's when I'm usually on the floor lying around. So yeah, I know it works. My daughter regularly steals it off me as a blanket, and then also to use it as a play blanket outside, and sometimes it's left in the rain. But to come back to this shirt, I've never washed it, ever. So yeah, kind of works. It's got longevity, and that was always my point in the beginning, to have something that doesn't go in this downward cycle, that starts something that's great and then just deteriorates, something that's stable the entire time. And those original prototypes, which were, you know, well, I loved, but actually they're really bad compared to this one, they're still out there. People still wear them, and they're starting to get holes and stuff in them, but that's probably because the fabric's quite different, the construction's different. And they phone up and they're like, I've got a hole in my shirt, you know, the arm's falling off, or, you know, the elbow's worn through. You know, I said, well, just, you know, we'll give you a discount, buy a new one. No way, man, I don't want to get rid of this shirt, it's amazing. Can't you just fix it for me? Okay, cool. So they send them in, we patch them up, send them back to them, they are stoked. Okay. So we know we've got this amazing product, but what we need to do is tell the rest of the world about it. And that's probably what we haven't been doing, because what we've realized as co-owners and directors of a company is that it takes up a lot of time and energy and just to try to create the product. And what we need to do now is get it out there to other people. We know how good the product is. So things like this might help, and talking to people like you might help. But yeah, we want to see this go everywhere because it's so good. But that was never, ever, ever the idea. The idea was just to have something that I and Richard could ride around with and feel pretty cool in. Gentlemen shredders, that's what we call ourselves. So the last number is 50, yeah. And this is maybe like the little cheeky sales ploy, because why not? You've got to take an opportunity. Basically, you've had to put up with me talking to you for the last 20, 25 minutes or something like that. So I think it's only courteous that I offer you a discount on any shirts if you want to buy in the future. So I'll give you £50 off any shirt if you want to buy one off me. Yeah, so come and speak to me afterwards.
The Do Lectures is here to share stories of remarkable people in the hope they will inspire you to go and do amazing things too. There are over 300 talks to listen to, or if you prefer, watch on our website, thedolectures.com. Hit the subscribe button on your favourite podcast platform to get the latest episodes when they come out.